This episode of Earl Grey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek FM at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org.
I'm Daniel Davis. I played Professor James Moriarty on Star Trek The Next Generation, and you're listening to Trek FM.
T.O. Greyhawk.
Welcome, listeners, to another cup of Earl Grey. I'm your host, Pierre LaRocco, and joined with me today is Joe Keegan and Kevin Scarf.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm going to say your surname, Pierre LaRocco. That's actually how you say your surname in my accent.
Okay, sounds good to me. Yeah.
Amy's not here to disagree, so that's fine. As long as you're happy, because it's your surname. How are we, guys? I am very happy because it's the first day of my school summer holidays, so I technically don't have to go back to work until August 11th. So,
lovely. Lovely.
Thank you so much.
Summer has started. Things are green. It's warm outside. All we need is things to open up again, and I'll be happy.
Pierre, what's going on with you?
I'm in the midst of figuring out how to open up a school, reopen a school in the new world, new normal that we live in. Try to keep everyone safe.
That's a very interesting quandary to be in. We have been planning for a blended model, which is no more than a third of the school coming back at any one time. So that's like 400 students back in the building for half days and then working from home the rest of the time. And then the government just announced that because the number of deaths has hit zero on multiple days in a row, then we can go back full time in August. So everybody's going a bit nuts that we did all this work for nothing. But I'm like, you know, they're going to do what's best for us, I think. If it's safe, we'll be back full time. If it's not, we won't be back at all. And if it's somewhere in between, then we'll be doing something in between. So.
Yeah, we're planning three models right now. And then we're going to figure out which one is best to move forward with.
Yeah. So, it's all very crazy, and we'll just take one day at a time and do whatever's best for everyone, I suppose. So
that's all we can do.
Yeah.
All right, so I hear we have some Babel Conference feedback.
Yes, we do. So, we've got some feedback about episode 329, which was about deleted scenes, season 7. And first is from Joey Slowinski, and he says, "Good episode, guys. I have a suggestion, since it seems that the deleted scenes episodes will soon be coming to an end. It struck me as you were talking about whether or not you thought that the scene added something to the episode, that perhaps there are scenes that made it into episodes that could have been done away with. I'd be interested to hear you all talk about what scenes in some episodes, which had scenes deleted, you might have deleted instead."
Ooh.
That's a good idea. I think it could lead to a discussion about B stories. You know, most episodes have A plots and B plots, and sometimes True. The B plots are more interesting than the main story, and sometimes they are just silly. So we should maybe take a look at that at some point, B plots of episodes. Thank you for the suggestion, Joey. That's great.
And cool name.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. So Kimberly Lawler says, "Nice episode. I agree that I would cut most of the Gambit scenes, but the Beverly one should have stayed. It reminds me of the sickbay scene where she and Worf have escaped Surtris III in Chain of Command, and she knows Picard was left behind. She's devastated. Gates is so good with that. Understated, but deep emotion. Plus, I low-key love the friendship between Riker and Crusher. It was great to have the grieving scene with Riker and Troy, but we should have gotten the little one with Beverly too, instead of turning it into voiceover.
Interesting. For all the kind of bad character development that Beverly got and her underuse throughout the seasons, I think what she does with what she gets is really good. And it's just from through podcasting and talking about it and having to watch Star Trek that it really gets highlighted. I really come to appreciate what she does.
Yeah.
I really like Beverly. And I agree. It would have been good to see that scene.
Cool. So Kurt Klein says, cool kind of Superman style name, like Lois Lane, Clark Kent, Kurt Klein. Nice. I love this podcast. The new hosts are great too. And that's about you guys, because you guys are new hosts.
Well, thank you.
Thanks, Kurt. I also love this podcast because it's the only podcast I really do or listen to. So thank you. Right, Pierre, what are we talking about today? I'm very excited.
All right, so today we are talking about characters we never see again. So we're going to go through some one-off characters and talk about what we think they went on to do after leaving the episode. So we each picked three, and we have some honorable mentions, and we're kind of just going to go around and talk about the characters that we only saw once. And what we think happened to them. So let's start off with Kevin, your first character.
Can I add on to Kevin before you start that? Can I just warn you guys as new podcasters that if you steal one of mine, there'll be hell to pay. But I know roughly where you guys live. Pierre, you're in the US of A. Kevin, you're in Canada. So I can search these large land masses and find you and make you pay. So, just saying.
Okay.
All right. Well, then I hope you don't have Lieutenant Commander Shelby on your list.
I thought you can have it.
Oh, excellent. She is one of my all-time favorites. She was in two episodes, but it was only one story, sure. So I'm counting it. Best of Both Worlds, Part 1 and 2. Comes in like a spitfire, ready to take over. And it seemed like she was going to be a character that we were going to see over and over, but she never does appear again. Now, having said that, there are an entire series of books written about her. The New Frontier series, she is a major, major character in that. And that was one of the tough things about this topic is a lot of the characters I like do have longer careers in the novels, and Shelby is one, is no exception to that. The interesting thing was, I never realized it, and it's from reading the books, that she's never given a first name on the show. She's just Lieutenant Commander Shelby. I know from the books that her first name is Elizabeth, but that's not
she totally looks like an Elizabeth.
Mm-hmm.
See, yeah. I think the name Elizabeth makes her less threatening. I feel like
really?
I just feel like it's a less threatening name. I feel like Commander Shelby is so much more authoritative.
Yeah, that's okay. True. That's true. But she's a character who's very career-minded, right? So I would say that after helping stop a Borg invasion, I would think she'd go on to be some kind of a great fleet commander in the Dominion War. And, be a major power player at Starfleet Command, I would think. That's where I would see a character like Shelby ending up.
It's interesting. It's interesting that her name's Elizabeth, but it makes me laugh because Elizabeth can be shortened to Liz or Betty. So which really, really takes all the power out of her, Commander Shelby, to Betty Shelby. Mm. She runs a pub in the countryside in England. What else? Yeah, I'm not sure I've ever really thought about what she went on to do. Obviously, she was working on the Borg scenario at Starfleet. So was she involved in that in First Contact, possibly?
Well, she was assigned to help rebuild the fleet after the Battle of Wolf 359. That mm-hmm. was in the episode. That's where she was off to at the end of that episode. So she was involved with the fleet as a whole at some point, which leads me to believe that she would be involved in the Dominion War.
Ooh. So if she was involved in rebuilding the fleet, didn't Sisko end up there too?
Oh,
after Wolf 359?
I think.
So maybe her and Sisko had something to do with building Defiant class ships.
Could be.
Let's make it so. We are here to decide these things, so we can set it in stone.
And also with Shelby, like I think one of the reasons why we don't see her again is because I think she gets a captaincy pretty quickly too. Because you know the Starfleet's kind of in shells and after the Borg, so when they're rebuilding the fleet, I think she just goes and gets a captaincy of one of the new ships.
I will dip into the books a little bit. It's been a while since I've read them, but that is true in the novels. And in fact, she becomes an admiral very quickly as well.
That doesn't
novels,
surprise me. So. Yeah. Best of Both Worlds has two lines in it that I never really understood at first watching. And there's one that I never understood because I literally didn't understand what they were saying. Not the words, but I couldn't make it out. They're in a turbo lift. It's Geordi and Riker. And Geordi says to Riker, she's a formidable presence to say the least. But LeVar Burton, it just rolls off his tongue. But it becomes almost like one word. She's a formidable presence to say the least. And I never understood what he said until recently and I looked it up. And then when she beams down to the planet early, and who is it? Is it Shelby that says, early bird gets the worm? No, LaForge again says it, early bird gets the worm. And then Data says, this is one of my favourites, Data says, I can detect no sign of, was it crawling vermicula or avithonal life forms? Talking about birds and worms. So I quite like that.
Nice. So yeah, that's a character I would love to see come back. Wouldn't she be a fun character for Picard to run into on that show?
I can't really comment about Picard because I really don't like it.
Hate that show. Yeah, that's forgot fair. That. Sorry, didn't mean to bring up some bad memories.
Can you go, Pierre?
I can personally do without her, to be honest with you. Yeah,
really?
I mean, she had her place in Best of Both Worlds, but I don't need her to come back again.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Awkward. I wouldn't mind if they brought anybody back like that, like Bruce Maddox, but have the same actor play him. Because nothing about Bruce Maddox and Picard looked remotely similar to the Bruce Maddox in Measure of a Man.
Yeah.
Just say.
All right, Joe, so your first character here.
Oh, who to pick? Okay, I've mentioned this character before on Earl Grey. This character is one of my outstanding favourites of all time because they are pretty much me in the future, except she's a woman, and that is Lieutenant Commander Nella Darin.
Oh, you sniped me!
I'm allowed to because I've been here longer.
Sorry.
Well, it's an easy go-to for me because she's a physicist, she does astronomy, well, she's an astrophysicist, and I'd studied physics and astronomy at university, and I now teach physics, so career-wise, we are literally the same. She also plays the piano, I play the piano. Her playing the trio, Chopin piano trio in G minor, is what made me want to go and learn it, and I can kind of play it not as well as her, so dead easy pick. For me, I would like to see what she does afterwards. I know Memory Beta said that she made a few appearances like in the the video game Starship Creator. She went aboard the Oberth class USS Yosemite to become head of stellar cartography. And then there was a few books that she was in. She transferred from the Enterprise to the USS Havana. But we don't know how reliable that is because Picard was in an extremely unreliable state of mind, we're told. And then in the TNG ebook, A Sea of Troubles, a changeling infiltrated the Enterprise E in 2372 and studied Picard's personal logs. And then when they were negotiating between the Alpha Quadrant species and the Dominion, the changeling mentioned that he could impersonate any one of Picard's previous female acquaintances. Really, I don't know why you would mention that in a negotiation, but hey. So yeah, I would like to see what she's doing now. I imagine she combined her love of astrophysics and using, what was it she was doing? Using fractal something something to estimate the configuration of star systems like 4 billion years before they'd formed. I think she used that knowledge and her love of music to create some kind of star system that was a giant piano. I think. Yeah.
I could see that.
Easy.
I could see that.
So, I imagine her being on the, I guess, the fringes, you would say, because the Romulans are so secretive, but trying to be on those teams that were trying to help with the Romulan supernova. Right? Because, like, that's kind of her expertise, you know, how star systems form, how galaxies form, how they collapse, things like that.
How they evolve, yeah.
Yeah.
The end life of stars, yeah. Where they're in the Hertzsprung-Russell diagram. Totally, I could see that. This must be in a book somewhere, but I couldn't see any mention of it, so...
Yeah, she's a character that really hasn't appeared very much afterwards in extra media. But I'd like to think that she's still out there. Maybe she's formed a little musical quartet or quintet or something, and she's out there among the stars playing her music and trying to find love.
Oh, no, she's the captain of a starship where instead of the L-cars displays, every station has a keyboard, and that's the only way to input is by playing the piano.
I like that.
Cool. So, yeah, Lieutenant Commander Nella Darin, definitely for me. Very old-fashioned name, Nella. Is Nella short for something?
I don't think
it's
so.
It's really kind of Victorian-sounding, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Nella. I know there's an old-fashioned name, I don't know if you guys have it, where you are Ina, I-N-A.
Ina, okay. I know someone named Ina. She's an older woman. Like, she was my grandparents' friend.
Okay, so Ina
friend.
Is basically, the tradition was your firstborn took the father's name, regardless of whether or not it was a boy or a girl. So if it was like, William was the father, firstborn was a daughter, she would be called Wilhelmina. And so you get lots of girls from way back called like Wilhelmina, Thomasina, I'm trying to think of other examples.
Jacqueline.
Oh, I suppose that might work, yeah. I can't remember, I can't think of any. So basically take the father's name and add Ina. Yeah.
Add an A.
And so that becomes the female name. So I'm thinking Nella might be something similar. Nella. Anyways. Pierre, what's your first pick?
My first pick is from the episode Suddenly Human.
Okay.
And it is Jono, also known as Jeremiah Rosa. And here is what I think happens to Jono. I think he gets back with his family.
His human family?
No.
Okay.
With his... with Endar and that family. And I think he is still intrigued about humans, right? Mm-hmm. So he's on Talarian, and he's still a little intrigued, and he tells Endar that he's intrigued. Endor tells him to explore it, and he reaches out to Picard. And then I think they create a subspace. They have several subspace dialogues going back and forth about things in general. Mm-hmm. And I think that Jono ultimately goes to Starfleet Academy and joins Starfleet under the name Jono Rosa.
I like that idea. I think we might have to make that canon. I like the fact that they were kind of... It was very military-minded. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking that there's some kind of Dominion War involvement. And he becomes like a hero, maybe. Either after he's joined Starfleet, or the Jem'Hadar attack his planet. Not Earth, the other one. What did you say it was called again?
Tellarite. He's Tellarian.
Okay. So they attack that and he saves a bunch of people. And then that's what prompts him to join Starfleet, maybe. That has to be some kind of hero thing going on.
Yeah.
He has appeared in books afterwards. So he joins the Tellarian space fleet in the novel Sins of Commission, and his adopted father becomes the Tellarian ambassador to the Federation.
Okay.
So.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I like that choice.
Well, when you mentioned the sort of plot of that episode, I thought you were going to snipe my character because... It's quite a similar situation. I'm going with Amanda Rogers. She was a Q raised as a human, sort of in a reverse of Jono's situation. She was taken under Beverly's wing and taught all about how to be... Well, she grew up as a human, and then Q showed up to take her away because she's really a Q. And after that, even though she said she'd like to come back and check on things and see how things are going, we never saw her again. But I would like to think that she joined the Continuum and created some ripples over there and said, we got to stop messing around with the quote-unquote lesser beings and was trying to... create a sense of sanity in the Q Continuum. That's my hope for what happened to Amanda Rogers. Do you have any thoughts?
She was played by Olivia Dabo, who's really, really, really nice. I met her in Vegas last year, I think. Really cool. It would have been nice in Voyager when they had a bunch of Q come on if they got her as like a stabilizing force. Because remember in Voyager, they went to the Continuum and it's in the middle of their civil war. It's basically tearing itself apart. So it would be nice if she went there as the human influence.
That was my hope.
So she appears in one of the comic books. She appears in the Q Conflict comic book arc.
Oh, yes, she does. Hmm. That's the comic where all the four crews get mixed up, right? Yes, I have read that. I forgot she was in that.
Interesting. I have a bunch of comic books, but I have not read them yet. I collect the Star Trek graphic novel collection.
Oh, those are nice.
Yeah, but there's like 120 volumes or something.
And
we're almost there.
Those were showing up at my dollar store too. I picked one up for I think $3. It was, they're really great books, but they all went away quickly, and I was only able to buy one.
Yeah. Oh no! Never mind. Next time.
Joe, who's your second character?
I don't know. Who to pick? I think I'm going to pick. Okay, I'm going to pick Roga Dinar.
Okay.
Who was from The Hunted, Season 3, Episode 11, and he was played by Jeff McCarthy. He was that Ingotian soldier who escaped the Luna 5 penal settlement and eluded like all attempts to capture him. He was kind of augmented. He went through some really rigorous physical, mental, emotional, military training back when he was a soldier. And his home planet were kind of abusing all the previous soldiers and keeping them in jail because they were too dangerous. And that, I think that's the episode with, what's his name? The guy that played Zefram Cochrane.
Oh, James.
What's his name?
James Cromwell.
We're getting sacked.
Cromwell.
James Cromwell. Ugh. Thank you, Pierre. Yes, James Cromwell plays the Angoshian Prime Minister in that episode. Him. Interestingly, there was a series of short stories that were part of a competition for new writers called Strange New Worlds. And there's a short story called Orphans that describes when Roger Darrar was recruited to Section 31 during the Dominion War. And he was sent to guard the Guardian of Forever on Planet Gateway. And then when, I've not read the story myself, but according to Memory Beta, when he finished his assignment, he granted the Guardian's wish to be free and set him free because he was basically locked into this gateway system. So I would like to see what he did because he would be really useful in the Dominion War as like a frontline troop, kind of good all-round fighter, ability to evade tracking systems, kind of can break out of transporter beams, all sorts. So him against Jem'Hadar would be a good fight. What do you guys think?
Yeah, he's not a character that came to mind immediately. I had to look him up to see who he was, and you're right. He's a very interesting backstory, okay. And he would make an interesting character to follow in sort of like a spy mystery series or a, you know, like a. Like a Jason Bourne kind of a character, maybe.
Yeah. Or if we get a Section 31 series, if they do like short treks that are in the 24th century, based on that, that'd be cool to see what he's doing. They won't, but it'd be nice. I chose him because he's nice to look at. That was just me. But I couldn't decide who to pick, him or Thaddeus O'Connor from the Outrageous O'Connor. And they were those are my two eye candy choices.
So yeah, I definitely would love to have seen or know more about even not necessarily just him, but all of the soldiers from that world of what they did during the Dominion War, right? Because the whole Alpha Beta Quadrant is in trouble. So you would think that no matter how disgruntled they are about their situation, they would have joined in. And they would have been a huge asset.
True. But they weren't part of the Federation, though. So you'd imagine that their planet was attacked, but they voluntarily chose to serve again to protect their home world, maybe. Cool.
All right.
What's next? So, I'm excited still.
What is next? That is the question, isn't it?
I know you've pondered long and hard about this, Pierre. What is
I have, I have. And as you guys know, I kind of fancy myself of knowing the fringe characters. So I tried to dig deep here.
Yes.
Okay. Here you go.
Okay.
Marissa Yale.
Oh, no, I don't. I know that name, Marissa.
I do not. I'm going to look it up.
And I don't. I can see. I can hear somebody say it
from the episode First Contact.
Oh, the scientist woman.
The scientist woman
who leaves with the Enterprise because she's so intrigued.
Who leaves with the Enterprise? Oh. Yes. So she would then be the only of her species not on their planet. Because they're essentially almost warp planet.
Yeah.
So she decides that she can't go back to her planet knowing that she won't ever leave it again. And she's been dreaming about the stars and asked Picard if she can join them on their journey, or that's what she says. But, you know, when you look at reality, what does that mean then? Like, where does she then go? Right? Because if you think about it, they're almost warp. So her knowledge of science is much less than what Starfleet has, right? So
yeah.
So where does she go? Does she go back to school? Does she go back to school and then become a major scientist somewhere? Does she just enjoy life on numerous planets and just kind of bounce around?
I think she's sipping cocktails on Risa.
No, I don't think she is. I think she was so intrigued by the fact that there are other species and other civilizations out there, and that she was a scientist, so she was very open-minded. She came to the realization that what she knew about science was probably very little compared to this massive starship that turned up and what they knew on board. So I think that she probably went to the Daystrom Institute or the Vulcan Science Academy and just absorbed everything that she could get her hands on and just embraced this new wealth of knowledge that was made available to her.
Yeah, I like the Vulcan Science Academy idea, because I was thinking Daystrom too, but I feel like Daystrom does a lot more physical science. Like, they do like androids and things like that. I could see her on Vulcan. Like, and then just being intrigued of the whole Vulcan way of life, and
I always seen her as slightly too excitable for Vulcans, with the Vulcans not be super irritated by her, because she.
But
just,
that's
like,
what I think
so
would be fun about it.
Yeah. Okay.
I see her going to a place where there are lots of different people from lots of different worlds, because I think she's also fascinated by the sort of diversity of cultures on the Enterprise. So, you know, I don't know where she'd end up. Maybe at Starfleet Academy or at headquarters, some kind of Starfleet research station where there's lots of people from many different worlds of the Federation.
I suppose if you're, it's like one of us being picked out of Victorian times and brought to the 21st century. It's like, what do you do with that? So the galaxy is your oyster, essentially. So much scope. I like, that's a good choice. That was a choice that I might have picked, but didn't occur to me, being the scientist. A scientist out of time. Yeah, totally. I like it. Okay. Kevin's first, it's the third pick.
Okay, I'm going to make a pick that I think in some ways, because he came early in the run of Star Trek as a whole, he creates more questions and problems than he solves. But that is Ambassador Odan, the very first Trill we ever see. He's a very interesting character in that, and an interesting species in that at that point, we know nothing about the Trill. And there are no medical references about the Trill, and yet later we find out that the Trill have been around for a very long time. So it does bring up some questions, but I love this episode. I love his romance with Beverly. I love the questions that come up when he changes, when his symbiont is put into other bodies. So at the end, Odan is put into the body of Kareel, the new female host, and she goes off to continue being an ambassador, apparently. So I have to wonder where Odan ended up on the Trill homeworld, because we learn later that your Trills aren't supposed to have any contact at all with people that they knew in their previous lives. So Does Odan have to give up all of that? It's questioning to me. He doesn't quite fit with what we come to know later about Trill society. So
yeah, obviously they created this character and this species for that one episode, And then later in Deep Space Nine, they thought to go back to it and kind of get all the details together. What is funny is looking at the Trill, now the surgery, where the symbiont has like coloured feathers in the TNG episode. And then in Deep Space Nine later, we see that they're just kind of fleshy coloured worm-like creatures.
He's got eye ridges.
That's right. So, yeah. I suppose we could assume, like, look at the diversity of life on Earth, and then look at the different shapes and sizes of people or humans on Earth. So we could maybe say that that's a different species of Trill, the one with no spots and eyebrow ridges.
That's what I assumed. But, I think it'd be interesting to find out where Odan ends up, and do you think, because Dax has many different careers over Dax's existence. Would Odan?
So what was the Odan symbiont's previous lives like? We need a short story where he undergoes that ritual, where he gets his closest friends and family to kind of live for a short time with the memories and personalities.
Well, Odan was in a short story in the Lives of Dax, that's what I'm looking for, collection of short stories. And so Odan and Dax did know each other years and years ago. At least three of Odan's hosts have served as Federation ambassadors, so that's interesting.
I guess when you're a joined Trill, I guess there's a point where there's some give and take of what, like when you say what you do, like the symbiont has so much collective knowledge. So like if you're an ambassador, they have so much collective knowledge of being an ambassador. I feel like almost, and it might be this way, where they kind of have to choose someone to join them with that might also enjoy being an ambassador. You know, because I feel like that's part of the strength of the Trill, is especially the joint Trills, is that you get this wealth of knowledge from years and years and years. So, could you imagine if we were able to have an ambassador that's been an ambassador to a certain place for like 100 years, you know, like it would be so helpful, and that you wouldn't have to rebuild relationships and things like that. So I wonder if Dan's an ambassador, if they, when it's time to, for a new host, if they kind of find a new host that wants to be an ambassador or kind of, you know, is leaning towards that way, or if the new host just kind of understands for the good of their culture, of their community, that they need to become an ambassador now.
It's interesting that you say that they maybe try and find hosts that have similar kind of maybe related careers. I know Jadzia, there was one that was it Toman that was the test pilot. There was one that was a test pilot. There was a gymnast. Jadzia's a scientist. Not exactly similar. But Jadzia was a scientist and got the Dax symbiont, but she continued to be a scientist. But she learned from all the previous kind of lives that she'd lived. Because what would it be like if you had all your previous lives? What would it be like if all your previous lives were scientists and then the next host was like a hippie musician? How do you square that? What do you just become a hippie musician, or are all your internal lives kind of screaming out to do some
science? I always got the impression that the symbionts wanted to have as huge a variety of experiences as possible. But what that means for Odan, I don't know. Like I say, Odan is the prototype Trill. He's the one that sort of all of the ones are based after. So, you know, they didn't, they hadn't created an entire Trill society when they, when Odin was created. He was there to tell this interesting character conflict story for Beverly. Really, it was the purpose of that character. So I can excuse the sort of inconsistencies in the Trill story because of that.
Yeah, I don't, do you know what? I'm not a fan of things being canon because it's a whole universe they're creating. So everything's up for being changed or being tweaked or not being exactly the same as the previous time you've seen it. So I don't mind that.
Thank
nice
you.
Pick. I like that one.
So what's your third and final pick, Mr. Joe?
Mr. Joe is, I think I've decided that I'm going to pick Tam Elbrin and Gom 2 because they joined together in episode Tin Man, which was season 3, episode 20, to become... So if you remember, Gom 2 was without his crew because his crew had died. He was a sentient spaceship, an organic biological ship. His crew had died from radiation poisoning and he was deeply depressed and was waiting beside a star for it to go supernova so he could essentially commit suicide. And then Tam Elbrin, the Betazoid, comes on board the Enterprise and they go and investigate this unknown ship that they find. And it turns out that Tam Elbrin, who is a kind of deeply disturbed Betazoid, he can link together with Gom 2 and become essentially one. Well, the ship has a crew of one that's, they're telepathically linked. And they go, they basically vanish at the end of the episode. Do whatever they're going to do. So I'm kind of intrigued about what did they do? It's like, what did Wesley Crusher and the Traveller do when they went off together? What did Tam Elbrin and Gom 2 do? What did they get up to? Did we ever see them again? There is a mention of him in the DS9 novel Valhalla, where in 2371, Chief O'Brien mentions him, and mentions him in reference to the sentient starship that they come across called Enak. I don't really know what they did. I explored all the mysteries of the Milky Way. Did they go outside the Milky Way? Did they? I don't know. I want to know though.
Yeah, so that's actually an episode I haven't watched in a long time. But that is intriguing of what they did.
A brilliant soundtrack on that episode. There's Crescendo Audio, the guys that produced the TNG CDs. It's got a really amazing orchestral soundtrack to it, so if you haven't listened to it, you should go listen. Kevin, what do you think happened to them?
I think they are happy together, living a life of solitude, exploring unusual supernova and other cosmic anomalies.
I think so too. That's very vague, but very specific. Cool. Kevin?
Nope. Pierre?
Nope. Pierre, your third choice?
All right, my third and final choice. Ready?
Yes.
From the episode Legacy.
Trying to think what Legacy was about. What season was it?
Legacy is season... Legacy is season 4, episode 6.
I had to look it up, so I'll let Joe suffer and try to guess.
Give me a clue.
I have a feeling we're talking about the relative of a crew member.
Oh, is it Thingy Worf's half brother? No. No, that's later.
Do you give up, Joe?
I've never given up. I've never been known to give up about anything. This podcast could last quite a long time. Legacy. Is it Ishara Yar? No.
Yes!
Oh, so that's the episode.
Ishara Yar.
When they go to that scary rape gang planet.
Yes. Cool. So what happens with Ashaar Yar? So in my headcanon, this is what happens. Mm-hmm. She, the implant was taken out, right? Yeah. Like, they don't really talk about that. But they gave one side a distinct advantage. Mm-hmm. So I believe that she takes over the planet or the colony, and she's in the lead of the colony. I also believe that at some point she gets kidnapped by the Tal Shiar.
Okay. Or because she's...
And meets her...
Niece?
Grandmother, niece? Grandniece? Aunt, niece?
Be her niece.
Is it just her niece? Because it's her sister's
daughter. Is it just
daughter?
Her niece? Yeah, her niece that's older than her. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Time travel.
So I believe she meets her niece mm-hmm. and then becomes an agent for the Tal Shiar and spies on the Federation.
Ugh, you've spoiled it. Okay, that's dark. But I don't mind that. Was the planet a Federation colony? Or was it kind of on the fringy?
Yes.
Okay.
So. It was a Federation colony.
Why would she spy on the Federation?
Well, it was a Federation colony that went really, really bad. Right? So.
Okay.
I don't know why the Federation would have left them alone to devolve into rape gangs, but meh.
So I think that's part of why she then spies on the Federation.
Exactly.
She's mad at them about the way it went down with the planet, the way the Federation just left them, the way that the Federation didn't help, and feels that the Federation is everything the Romulans think they are.
And the Federation took her sister away, too.
Federation took her sister. Yep. And she finds a family member who's completely against the Federation, and she aligns with her.
Okay. I'm going to buy it if it's something similar to The Mind's Eye, where Geordi is going on holiday and gets kidnapped by the Romulans and becomes programmed to assassinate a Klingon envoy. Remember that episode? So yeah, they kidnap, they take Ashaar, they brainwash her into becoming a spy for the Romulans. Okay. Good choice. I'm okay with this now.
Yeah, I like your plot idea for Ashaar, that she becomes an agent of the Romulans. Makes sense after what she's been through. And the kind of character she didn't want to change either. She was not a character who was looking to become a nice person and join the Federation.
Right.
Okay, so what's that? Now we've gone round and we've got all nine of our people, okay? These nine people now make our crew.
Oh!
Just as a brainwave. So we have to have Gomtu as the starship with Tam Elgin as the captain. Maybe. Or the navigator. Oh. Will we make him the navigator? Because they're...
And Shelby would be the captain.
Shelby's the captain.
Yeah, Shelby should be the captain.
Marissa Yale's the science officer. Roga mm-hmm. Dinar is the chief of security. Who else did we have?
Odan is first contact specialist.
Yes, because he's the ambassador. We've got Nella Darin, who's just all-round science genius.
And Amanda Rogers is the chief medical officer.
And the Deanna Troi.
Mm-hmm.
And just... Yeah, but she... How does that work? Is she a Q? Because she could just get them out of any pickly situation.
That's a good point.
Maybe she got to return on the ground... Only on the case that she gives up her Q powers.
Okay. Or a bit like in... what's this show? What's the sci-fi show, kind of Western theme, that only had 13 episodes? Firefly? Thank you, Firefly. You know how the Macarena Baccarina's character, Marina Baccarin, we call her Macarena Baccarina for fun. Marina Baccarin's character is some kind of space prostitute, isn't she? And she's got her own wee shuttlecraft. Yeah.
She's a companion.
Yes, exactly. So I think Amanda Rogers is, oh, sorry, I have to kill this dog because he just won't stop crying. Go be quiet. Do you want to go out? Go away. You're annoying me. And this, anytime I talk, he's going to cry. And we can't cut it out. Yeah, so Amanda Rogers is maybe this kind of not part of the crew, but is always there, and she helps out from time to time. Maybe with her Q powers. I don't know. Who else do we have? Do we miss anybody?
Jono.
Oh, Jono. What is Jono?
He would be chief of security.
No, Roga Dinar is chief of security. Because he's like a super soldier. Interesting. We don't have a chief engineer. Do we?
No, we don't.
Oh, I suppose we don't need a chief engineer because it's like a biological sentient spaceship. So it just has to eat a star or something and it repairs itself.
Nice. Mm. I like it.
And what about Ashara?
Ashara Yar. We've got lots of kind of military people. Lots of security folk. We've got Ashara, we've got Roga Dinar, we've got Jono. We've got a bunch of sciencey people. We've got Marissa Yale. We've got Nella Darin. Well, that's five now. We've got Tam Elbrun, gone to Commander Shelby.
Odan.
Ambassador Odan. We missed anybody out?
I think that's everybody.
Yeah, that's everybody.
Cool.
That would be a very interesting crew. I would watch that show.
I feel like the whole ship's going to self-destruct in episode one. It's the shortest-lived Star Trek episode ever. Okay, so do you know what? We can add some additional people onto our crew with our any honourable mentions that we have. So,
Kevin, do you have anyone real quick?
I do. I have Jenna DeSora. Do you remember who Jenna DeSora is?
No. Jenna DeSora, was she Wesley's love interest? No.
No. She was Data's love interest.
Oh, yes. From the one with the Dark Matter Nebula. And there was the people...
I have a custom-made playmate figure of her.
Nice.
So, she was a security officer, actually. And I always wondered how she survived staying on the Enterprise with Data there, who just erased her from his memory. That's got to be a little off-putting, knowing that one of your superior officers just flipped a switch and turned off his subroutines about
that's
you.
That's the ultimate in being ghosted, isn't it?
It kind of is.
Wow, that's harsh. Yeah, so we've got another security person on our crew, Jen DeSora.
Do you have any other honourable mentions?
I have one left. Well, I mentioned Thaddeon O'Connor from The Outrageous O'Connor.
He's your fix-it guy.
Yes, he's like a merchant. He's like a roguish merchant handyman. He's a Neelix. He knows everything about everybody. He's better to look at than Neelix. I like this. Okay. So I've already mentioned him, so he's already there. But my last one is John Doe from season 3's Transfigurations. Mind they find him, this alien guy crash landed in an escape pod, and he's near death. But very quickly, Beverly brings him back and he heals super fast. And then he starts to manifest all these powers. It turns out his whole species is on the brink of this evolutionary path where they get to shed their corporeal form and become energy beings. Anybody that exhibits these powers has been hunted down and killed because the species don't want to go there. He was played by Mark Lemura. We've got a good looking crew of this ship, I think.
I
would love to have seen more of that, of their whole, of that whole species, kind of what's going on with them evolutionally.
Yeah.
Because
his plan after that episode was to go back to Zalconia and basically educate people that don't be scared of this evolution. This is natural. We're not freaks. Just embrace it and let's all evolve together and go do whatever we're going to do.
Yeah, that would have been a great like little arc of like just kind of. Just all the Star Trek ideals there, kind of, you know, diversity and you know, acceptance and all that. That would have been great.
Yeah, embracing difference. Yeah. I think there was definitely a metaphor there for accepting things that are different from you. So that's my mention.
All right. So I have an honorable mention. I might have broken all the rules with this one, but they only appeared in one episode, so I combined two characters that only appeared in one episode each, and I tweaked the episode a little to make a little more sense.
Have you created a Tuvix kind of for TNG?
No. I haven't combined. Oh, okay. I've merged their stories.
Sure. Okay. You're right.
So in Relics, I always thought it was a little mean that they gave Scotty a really little shuttlecraft. I think they should have given him a runabout.
Because they had runabouts at that point, yeah.
I don't
know. No, I think they did.
We're going to say they did.
Because yeah. Relics was season... What was it? Season six, seven? Yeah.
Six, I think.
And there was the... Yeah, they must have had runabouts. Runabouts were about at the time, so I don't see any problem with that.
So I think you give him a runabout. Mm-hmm. And then when he goes out, he realizes, because we were never told that this character died.
No.
He realizes that McCoy is still alive.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes and picks up McCoy. And Scotty and McCoy have adventures throughout the galaxy in their own runabout.
No. Then they go and find the Nexus and get Kirk back. And it's the three of them that go...
And they go to Romulus, of course, as well, to help out Spock with the reunification. Yeah.
And then they go to the Genesis planet, because obviously there's remnants of it after it blew up, and they find some Spock DNA, and they use some Borg maturation chamber to make themselves a mini Spock. But it goes wrong, so Spock is only like 6 inches tall.
Pocket, yes. Spock.
And McCoy can put him in his pocket all the time.
He's got a wee kind of lapel pocket. Yeah, I like this, a breast pocket.
We'll call him Spocket.
Spocket in McCoy's pocket. I like that. Okay, and because Uhura always wore her in-ear communication device, the Enterprise computer basically just learned her brainwaves. So Uhura can be... like the ship's computer.
Nice.
Which has been digitally copied. Who are we missing? Sulu and Chekhov.
I think his daughter would show up. I think Demora is probably still around.
Okay.
So they're causing so much trouble that the Federation's like, we need to rein them in a little. And they send Demora out to go and kind of rein them in.
That's
I don't know where we're going, but I do enjoy the journey.
I think we're writing a whole nother series.
I think so.
I think they all then end up in like the Orion sector and like have interesting moments with the Orions.
Like become part of the Orion Syndicate.
Well, or or like mess around with it, and like, because like, how great would it be to see Kirk, Scotty, and McCoy walk into a bar when they're all old, like just like an Orion like crazy bar, and, like,
or. It's not really their adventures. It's just they kind of settle down on a planet, and it's like it's like Star Trek does the Golden Girls.
Yeah. Like, not necessarily them doing hero adventure things. Yeah. Just them getting in trouble doing things, like Kirk gets in a bar fight because over a poker game or something.
Yeah,
like that.
Yeah. Okay. I think we're on to something. Pierre, you can type up the email to CBS and let's make this happen.
Okay.
Cool. That was fun.
All right. Yeah. Any final thoughts?
This reminded me a lot of our What If episode that we did with Amy a couple of weeks ago. It's just sort of fun trying to figure out what happens to these characters. Characters that obviously created an impact because we remember them, but we never see again. So this has been a lot of fun.
Exactly. It's not too serious a discussion. We're just picking up kind of the details about things we'd like to see again. So but like the what if, we can be as silly or as serious as possible. And if you're like me, you're going to go with the silly aspect. So, yeah.
I agree.
It was good fun, though. Enjoyed it.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. Thank you, everyone, for kind of getting excited about this topic and rolling with it. Mm.
Cool.
Well, it's been so much fun talking about our favorite characters we never saw again today. But it isn't the only thing we've been talking about here on the network. Here's what you might have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, Literary Treks.
Not wanting to be spoiled about this book, I would suggest that not listening now, read the book and then come back later, and then you can enjoy the whole freaking feature of this glorious analysis that we're going to give this.
I shot JR. Sorry, I thought we were getting into spoilers. My bad.
I don't know. I just like woke up from a dream. I was in the shower.
The orb.
But if you think about the fact that Sisko is with the prophets at this time, and Section 31 is going to try to kill the prophets, maybe that's a way for Sisko to re-enter the story and play his role in representing the prophets to overturn what Section 31 is trying to do and to champion that idea of truidic and end the season with that message that religion is fine for those who want to believe it, and it's also fine for you not to believe it.
Earl Grey.
One of my notes I made on this episode is that Riker is a cosplayer. He likes to put on the native costumes of the planets he goes to.
Yes.
Ewan, I have started making a Riker Angel 1 cosplay. Ewan wants it for SLB. So.
Nice.
Yes! That was one of my notes as well, was Riker's left nipple.
Doesn't leave much to the imagination, but yeah.
To the journey!
Quick snap poll. Suzanne, would you prefer Neelix to cook for you or Chell?
Chell.
Chell? Zach, Neelix or Chell?
Neelix.
Oh. Oh.
I see Leola root in your future. Lots of it.
Oh, yeah. Give me those exotic ingredients. Yes.
Chell is my man.
I mean, you can have... with Chell, you can get, like, all those pun food items that he made.
Exactly. It would be like Bob's Burgers in space.
Wow.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out all these shows and join the conversation about your favourite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts on iPhone, iPad, or Apple TV, or the desktop app Apple Podcasts app to get the latest episodes as soon as they are published. And please leave us a star rating and written review that helps others to find the show.
If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, YouTube, and most third-party apps, and you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website or grab the RSS link.
We'd love to hear your thoughts on today's show. And there are so many ways for you to do that. The best place to join in a larger conversation is the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, and it should come right up.
If you'd like to send us an email, you can use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose to send to a show and select Earl Grey. That will come right to us and we might read your email on the show. You can also find the network on Twitter and Instagram at TrekFM and on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM.
So Kevin, where can people contact you when you are not rewriting Federation history?
Well, of course, you can find me on the Babel Conference. I lurk in there quite a bit, and you can message me through that. I do a podcast with some friends talking about all kinds of geeky things. It's called True North Nerds. You can listen to our review of the Disney Plus movie Artemis Fowl on our latest episode. And we're going to talk about a Goofy movie next, so we're having some fun over there. Joe, where can people find you when you're not psychically connected to a sentient alien starship?
Well, when I'm not doing that, because obviously all listeners know that I am permanently sentiently connected telepathically to something else. You can find me on the Babel Conference, as usual. You can email me, joepodcasts@gmail.com, and you can tweet me on the Twitter at joeyjoe77uk. And Pierre, where can people contact you when your spaceship isn't blowing up in the first episode?
Well, I am on the Babel Conference also, so on Facebook, so you can always message me there or write a comment in the comments. And you can tweet me on the Twitter at PierreLaRocco21. If you'd like to help us keep all our shows coming to you each week, you can become a patron of the network on Patreon. Visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm to get all the details. Perks include early access to episodes, exclusive content, producer credits, and more. Available through our special patrons website, Patron Zone.
It requires a great deal of money to produce, host, and distribute these shows each month. We really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm.
We'd like to take this opportunity to recognize our current associate producers, Norman Lau, Michael Huter, Thomas Appel, Chris Trubuzio, Jim McMahon, Justin Ozer, and me, Joe Keegan. Thank you for supporting Trek FM and especially Earl Grey.
So join us next time for another cup of Earl Grey.
These are the voyages of the USS Gom 2. Her continuing.
If you can't make the big decisions, Commander, I suggest you make room for someone who can.
Oh.
Energize.